This is the American Ag Network's Week in Review for August 25th. I'm Sabrina Hill. Later in the show, I'll be talking with BASF about what you can do to help the monarch butterfly population. But first, Rusty Halverson has the latest on trade disputes between the U.S. and China. The details of the U.S. aids package for farmers are expected next week. Also, folks from across the Upper Midwest gathered in Mitchell, South Dakota for Dakota Fest this past week. Here's Rusty.
The United States and China went ahead with tariff hikes on billions of dollars of each other's goods on Thursday in an escalation of a battle over Beijing's technology policy. The 25% duties that were previously announced apply to $16 billion of goods from each side, including automobiles and metal scrap from the U.S. and Chinese-made factory machinery and electronic components. With no settlement in sight, economists warn the conflict could spread. Chinese leaders have promised to help struggling exporters and ordered banks to lend more freely to them. The expected Friday release of the details of the president's farmer aid package pushed back until Monday. That, according to USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue, the rule covering USDA plans to make the aid payments and take other actions to help farmers is still under review at the Office of Management and Budget. Ryan Findley, chief executive officer of the American Soybean Association, says the details so far are pretty scarce.
It is a big question mark. That's what we're hearing. We've had a lot of conversations with USDA, and we've asked a lot. And when you have a formal rule and it's at the Office of Management and Budget getting approval, they're not allowed to talk about it. So you can tell them your thoughts. You can ask them a bunch of questions. But in terms of them being able to tell you what's in it, they can't, and we don't know. So it's a big question mark for us.
It was speculated this past week that the plan could compensate soybean producers $1.65 a bushel on their 2018 production. That's still up in the air.
There's a lot of questions that we can still ask, and I think farmers are going to be interested in, okay, are the payment limits going to apply to what I grow this year when I look at that payment, whether it's 65 cents or $1.65. And if those payment limits do exist, is it just on that payment, or would it also be on an ARC or a PLC payment? Are those combined? And so if we look at rough math of 4.3 billion bushels last year and a payment at $1.65, you get to some big numbers really quick. But I think we need to caution that one, we don't know if it's going to be $1.65 or something less. And two, there's a whole bunch of other questions as to, well, is it going to be based on your production this year, which we believe it would be. And if it is, what does that payment look like? So a lot of speculation. I don't want to come across that we would know anything at this point. And I think that there are questions out there. But USDA is putting this together, and they're going to come out with a good proposal next week that we can review, hopefully next week that we can review.
I'm sure you're hearing from your growers in a state like Missouri that, you know, has been hit by the drought, and their production is going to be way down, which would give them less in aid based on that kind of a formula.
And there's another question. What about producers with a short crop this year if the payments are applied to production numbers?
And if you are in Southwest Minnesota, parts of Southeast South Dakota, you had too much rain, and so it's a pretty tough crop from the farmers that I've heard from in that area. Missouri has had some droughts in a big chunk of the soybean growing area, and so they're saying, look, I have the benefit of really low prices and really low yields, which is not a good combination. And I shouldn't laugh at that because it's not fun, but it's also the unfortunate part that if there is a payment and it's based on production for this year, that's tough. But I think that the administration, my perception in the conversations that we've had is that they look at this surge or this bridge payment to help farmers from the value of what they produced this year being lower than what it could have been had we not had the trade war with China.
We were broadcasting this past week from Mitchell, South Dakota, where Dakota Fest was underway. The Outdoor Farm Show attracts attendees from around the Dakotas, southern Minnesota, Iowa, and Nebraska. Reed Christofferson, Executive Director of the South Dakota Wheat Commission, stopped by our booth to visit and give us a wheat outlook.
We're wrapped up now with the winter wheat harvest, wrapped up with the spring wheat harvest, and you've got your sights set on next year and the planting season for next year's crop.
It is. It's just around the corner. It's time to be thinking about planting the next year's winter wheat crop. It's 2 to 3 weeks away for probably a lot of operators to start, and it'll extend over about that next month, 15 September, 15 October. So lots of opportunity.
Yeah, and speaking of opportunity, are you finding a little bit more interest this year for planting this fall?
We really are seeing some interest for a number of reasons. Certainly the most important for a lot of producers is that there's some profit potential out there. They're willing to look ahead to those 2019 markets, lock in some prices. They can certainly lock in a profit on a 2019 winter wheat crop.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a little uncertainty out there when it comes to trade and the environment around the world, but our good customers are still good customers.
They are, and we're out there. We want to work on their behalf, and probably the message that we really want to spread is it's time to look at a good, diversified rotation. Plan. Many of our producers have kind of gotten locked into a two-crop rotation. Really need to open that back up. We need to spread out that workload. We need to manage some of that herbicide resistance that we're seeing. We need to get in there and have access for cover crops and manure. And then soil health, of course, is first and foremost is something that's got to be looked at.
Okay. All right. Thanks for your time here at Dakota Fest, Reed. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
A big feature of Dakota Fest each year is the so-called Seed Row, where companies tout their latest genetics in their lineups ahead of the fall booking and buying season. I visited a bit with Luke Groenwaller in the Peterson Farm Seed Tent on Seed Row about LLGT27.
Crops looking not too bad in the area. How's everything looking back home for you guys?
Around Sioux Falls, things look really good, but you get north and west, the farther you go, it dries out. I know that Aberdeen, Gettysburg, kind of that northwestern part of my outlying territory is pretty dry right now.
Yeah. Now, with that dryness, we could certainly use a shot of rain here in August, but anything out of the usual popping up as far as disease issues or pests out there that you're hearing?
There hasn't been a lot talk about it this year. There's been a few talks of white mold in conversation that way, and then just today heard some chatter about some Goss's wilt out there.
Okay, so we need some rain, and we'd be pretty good.
Agreed.
Okay. Now, you're going around to the different farm shows. We're in farm show season, just ahead of harvest season. And there is a new approval just in July about Liberty Link GT27. Is that correct?
That's correct. And we've got that. We've got maturities in the early ones all the way up through 2.0 in our product guide. And we're fully prepared to get those out to market based on that approval.
Now, you guys have been doing replicated trials with that product for a while. How's it yield? How's it perform compared to what's out there already?
Performs very well because the Liberty Link was actually the new trials of the genetics, or the new genetics were kind of slowed down over the last few years, and all the new genetics were being targeted towards the balance soybeans, or the LLGT27 soybeans.
Okay.
So with the latest trait technology, you're also getting the latest genetics.
Okay. Now, guys can see, obviously, you have plots around the state for guys if they want to see it, boots on the ground?
Absolutely. We've got our corn and soybeans and grower observation plots throughout North and South Dakota and Minnesota, and just those are available for everybody to take a look at and see our products in several different different applications and variabilities.
Now, another product that is around the corner yet due to the Chinese approvals, we're kind of waiting. Enlist, are you guys excited about that?
We are. We're very excited about that. Upon approval, we will be able to hit the ground running with that, and we're fully prepared to have a full lineup of soybeans with that Enlist approval.
And Jerry Johnson in the Golden Harvest tent told me a lot of growers are asking questions about Enogen corn.
Yeah, so our high amylase Enogen product has been quite a bit of discussion. We've had a very good uptake with that product in the feed market, especially to ruminant animals, and we've had a lot of interest in that, and that seems to be developing. really good momentum there for that product, and a lot of customers talking about that.
For the guys that can't be here and maybe have some questions, how could they get a hold of you or the company? What's the best place to go?
So the best place to go, we have one of the things coming up in the next couple days here is we have quite a few field days coming up. So talk to their local dealer, find out when those are. There'll be invitations going out to growers for that, and a lot of those are planned here in the next week or two before soybean harvest sets in. So talk to their local dealer.
All right. Well, thank you for your time here at Dakota Fest, Jerry. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Rusty.
Grain traders this past week closely following crop scouts as they fanned out across the Midwest for the annual Pro Farmer Crop Tour. At Dakota Fest, I visited with Mike Miner with Professional Ag Marketing of Laverne, Minnesota.
Yeah, the traders are definitely following the tour closely here throughout the week as they scope out the Corn Belt to see what kind of crop we got out there working for us this year. And the results that they're finding would suggest that the USDA, they're up there in their findings for their yield.
A little overly optimistic, maybe,
yep.
For by USDA?
I think they're right about there.
Okay.
From my own crop tour there that we put on in early August, I estimated a 179 corn yield overall. Yeah. And the USDA jumped a little fast to that number, which scared me a little bit,
yeah.
To their 178.5. And from what we found from Pro Farmers Tour up until this point is that they're finding similar to yet some cases better results. So I wouldn't say that you can't lock it down and look at every individual stop. But as an overall, I'd say that we have a big crop out there, and that's no secret anymore, I would feel like. And the markets have seen that, just being defensive throughout the month of August here.
Yeah. Now, on the soybean side, there's been some talk out of the Midwest Crop Tour about pretty good pod counts, possibly a big crop out there, too. Do you think we've hit the right weather, though, for August for that crop to hit its full potential?
I definitely do. The August weather is what makes the soybeans right. And soybeans are hard. You can count all the pods you want, but at the end of the day, it seems like you truly don't know what soybean crop you got out there until you get the combines out rolling. But from what weather we've seen so far over the month of August, it seems to favor the soybean yields and back up the numbers that just the USDA put out themselves at the 51 there.
And meat company executives earlier this week saying that pork and chicken supplies will continue to rise as U.S. processing plants expand. Hormel Foods Corporation on Thursday cut its sales forecast for this year as the SPAM maker confronts lower pork prices, tariffs, and rising freight costs. Sanderson Farms reporting third quarter profits of $11.5 million compared with $115 million a year earlier. Hormel shares declined 3% on Thursday. Sanderson's stock fell 2.9%. I'm Rusty Halverson for the American Ag Network.
Thanks, Rusty. I joined Rusty out at Dakota Fest this week, where I talked with Chip Schilling, BASF's Sustainability Strategy Manager. Here's our conversation. All right, and we are here at Dakota Fest, and I am at the BASF booth, and we've got a giant monarch butterfly picture of standing behind you. Tell us why you're out here talking about monarchs.
Exactly. So monarchs are really under threat from a loss of habitat, climate change, some other areas. So what we're trying to do out here is really raise awareness of the role farmers can play around providing habitat for the monarch, which is milkweed.
So what can farmers do?
Exactly. So what farmers can do is think about areas that are outside of their fields. So roadways, ditches, sloughs, other areas that are outside of their cropping acres that they can either protect the milkweed that they've got or maybe think about reintroducing some milkweed into it.
So milkweed has for a while now been thought of something that farmers maybe want to get rid of and not have on their land. Why should they be thinking differently?
Yes, absolutely. It's a question we get frequently. And the one question I have back to farmers is how difficult is it for you to control in your fields? And that really helps kind of change the mindset a little bit because it's really easy now to control it in fields. So the thought is if it's outside of your fields, it shouldn't cause issues. But if for some reason you do get it into your fields, you should be able to easily control it.
So tell me, let's talk about BASF for a minute. And why does BASF care so much about the monarchs? Now, I know I've done several interviews over the last year or two with BASF on this very topic. Why does the company care so much?
Yeah, so again, it's an area that we found kind of lacking in research. We've sponsored some academic research to understand different ways that milkweed can be around farms and around monarch research. So that's one way. Two, it's just another opportunity for us to tell farmer stories about things that they're really doing to help provide positive benefits to the environment.
Right. You know, and I think a lot of the public doesn't understand, maybe don't hear those stories or don't really pay attention to it because there's so many other stories and misinformation about farmers and land. But when we have good stories about how farmers care for the land and the environment, it's good to bring those out to light.
Exactly. And the monarch specifically. So, you know, you go through grade school and you learn this whether you're in the country or in a city. So you learn about the monarch. So this is one of those topics that we've really found that's crossed over between both ag as well as the people that may be living in more urban environments. So again, it's a great way for us to tell the story of what farmers are doing and how they're playing a part of the solution.
Let's talk about this part of the country and the monarchs. I know that it's an important part of the country for the migration.
Yeah, so this is considered part of the North Corps by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So when I flew in here on Monday, you know, got the booth set up and then started driving down some dirt roads, the first cluster of milkweed I found maybe 5 to 10 monarch caterpillars right there. First place I stopped. So again, that just proves that this part of the country is really critical to the life cycle of the environment and really requires milkweed as a habitat for the monarch.
And milkweed in particular as a plant is extremely important to the monarch species. And why is that?
So this is the only larval host for monarchs. So it's the only place an adult butterfly will lay their eggs. And milkweed, then there are over 90 native species of milkweed in the United States. That's the only place and the only thing that monarch caterpillars will eat. So without milkweed, you don't have a monarch caterpillar, which then, you know, leads to challenges with the butterfly species.
So again, for farmers who are listening and they're hearing this and they probably have heard the message before, but you know, the more we hear something, the more importance it takes. What should they be doing or what can they do if they want to get involved and maybe get some more milkweed out there?
Exactly. So two things. One, they can visit monarchchallenge.com. So at the farm shows, we're signing up farmers to receive free milkweed next year. So again, visit monarchchallenge.com. The second thing is they can also visit Monarch Milkweed Habitat. We've gone through the pain of sifting through the USDA Plants database to understand what plants are native to your area, both milkweed as well as the nectar sources that the adult monarchs need. So that's another great research tool for you to use to think about what's native for your state, what are the things and the beneficial plants that are good for the monarch butterfly.
And so you're spreading this message also far and wide. You'll be at another farm show coming up next week.
Yeah, I will be at Farm Progress next week. I'll be in Texas later this fall in November, I think. I'll be at Ozark Farm Fall Fest. So I'll be across the country this year really talking about the monarch.
So lots of opportunities to find you in person and chat with you. And then again, give us those websites.
Yep, definitely. So first website is monarchchallenge.com. The second is monarchmilkweedhabitat.com. And again, if you've got questions, just look for the big pair of butterfly wings at any of the show booths. If you do come out to any of these fall farm festivals, and we'll be happy to answer those questions there.
Great. Thanks so much for your time today.
Great. Thank you very much.
Again, Chip Schilling with BASF. That's this week's review from the American Ag Network. I'm Sabrina Hill. For Rusty Halverson and myself, thanks for listening. Join us again next week.